Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused children with truth and love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is their one-size-fits-all answer for all children and adults who struggle with their sense of who they are, their sense of identity. But in no other area of education, medicine, or psychology is one treatment plan the best thing for every single person. We believe that every child is an individual and should be given the treatment and the care that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
I'm Erin Brewer, and what's our topic today, Maria?
Oh, Erin, today we're gonna talk about pornography. We're gonna talk about how pornography interplays and relates with gender dysphoria. And this is just another one of those difficult topics.
Yeah, and this one especially is very complex because the pornography and how it's impacting boys and the pornography and how it's impacting girls is very different. Mm-hmm. There's actually pornography right now that's being made that's targeting boys and young men and is trying to train them to be basically sissies. They call it sissy hypnoporn. And the whole goal is to encourage them to be identify as women who are very subjugated and degraded and demeaned. It's very disturbing. And I think most people, if they heard this, they'd be like, what? This is, you know, you've gone off the deep end. Again, every once in a while, I feel like, but there really is this phenomenon. And so there's that sissy hypnoporn that is very disturbing. And I've seen some of it, you know, just so I can be informed about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the goal is to train the male who's watching it to identify with the woman or the trans-identified woman who's being the submissive. And they do all kinds of things to degrade them. And they talk about, you know, being receptive. They want them to imagine both oral and anal sex as a woman. And so there's that. And then there's also the impact of girls seeing women degraded on pornography and expectations that are put upon them based on pornography. And then you have boys who are watching, you know, just regular pornography, who are being influenced to believe that that's how you treat girls and women. So it's a very complicated thing. And the question is, how does it really impact gender dysphoria? And I suspect you have some good ideas about how it impacts girls.
Well, so many things that you just talked about brought up all of these, oh, and thoughts in me. One of the things I did want to address when you talked about the sissy hypno porn, the hypno part of it, if anyone's heard of ASMR, and I can't remember what that stands for, it's like autosympathetic meridian response. I think that's what it is. ASMR videos are videos that they help you relax, they help you sleep. I actually do like to watch ASMR videos occasionally. The ones that I watch are like somebody pretending they're putting makeup on your face or pretending to do your hair, or like tapping has a real calming for some people. And so the ones that I watch are really innocuous and they're just about like helping you relax. But when it comes to the pornography, the cisno hippie porn, they're using those ASMR techniques to, as you said, train boys, and I think sometimes even girls, to train them to associate positive, pleasant, pleasurable feelings with these really degrading, perverse, unhealthy behaviors. Yeah. So that's where the hypno part of it comes from.
Coaching involved. And so some of the videos, there'll be somebody who's like whispering, you know, okay, take out your, you know, and coaching them to perform behaviors that feel good while they're watching this degradation of women. And so they start associating pleasure with the concept of that kind of degradation. And you know, imagine yourself with this woman. And it's very repetitive. It's super creepy. And one of the reasons I think that it's catching on is because of the way pornography works on our nervous system. That, you know, if you start watching porn when you're 8 or 9, and I know there are going to be people out there who say, oh, that's too young. But I was watching a webinar a couple days ago, and they said the average child who comes in who's got gender dysphoria started watching porn at 8 or 9. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it, but, you know, it happens young. And so if you start watching pornography when you're 8 or 9, you start with sort of, you know, man on woman, you know, maybe gentle, kind, or maybe just images, pornography, your mind habituates to that. You get used to it. You no longer get any kind of arousal. So then you have to search for something a little bit more challenging. And then that kind of, you know, habituates, you no longer arousing. So there's this desire to keep finding something more extreme, more over the top that will, you know, get those feelings going, which is incredibly destructive. But I think that's why cis-hypnoporn has come on, is because it's like pushing something different than regular porn.
Yeah, and when we see what's happening with sex ed in the schools, pornography is being shown, and it's being argued that this is sex ed. You know, oh no, this isn't bad. This is teaching kids. And so you're seeing younger and younger and younger kids being exposed to it in an educational setting, which is horrific. And I have my own story of when I was 9, I was at someone's house. This was supposedly somebody trustworthy, but I was shown soft porn. I was shown a pornography movie. I remember it so vividly. It was The Sensuous Nurse with Ursula Andress. And it was just what would be considered just light, soft porn now. But that has affected me. I still can see those images so crisply and clearly in my mind because I was so young. And that was my first introduction to what sex is and what it's supposed to be. And it has messed me up, and it's made me really sad.
That's so sad when the first exposure to sex is porn, and it does desensitize them. And it almost does cause this disassociation because the body, the sensations of the body become sort of feminine and separate from the emotions. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I actually took a class in college, my first year of college, called The Virtues of Vice. And one of the units was on pornography. So we were sitting in a classroom in college watching porn and, you know, doing an analysis of it. And I look back and it makes me really angry how that just normalized porn. You know, here I am in college and we're watching porn, it must be normal. And you know, it was not uncommon to walk into, you know, a dormitory lounge and have there be porn on. It wasn't uncommon at all. It was sort of just part of the culture. And so, and that was a long time ago. And so I'm thinking if that was normalized back when I was in college, I can't imagine.
Yeah, now it's normalized for showing in kindergartens. And I've heard so many couples who've gone to couples therapy and the therapist tells them to watch porn together, that will improve their relationship.
Wow.
And there's nothing about watching porn that's going to improve your relationship. And we actually have a video clip of a man who he struggled with a porn addiction and has come out of it. And now he's written a book called Porn Nation. And he talks about what porn does to your ability to have an intimate relationship. So
let's talk about that now, because I think that is at the crux of the issue, is that, you know, it's not that we're prudes. It's not that we're, you know, oh, porn. It's that they're starting to find that this has physiological and psychological impacts that are profound, that impact your ability to form good relationships. So let's go ahead and watch that.
You know, one of the things is you know, compulsive masturbation to pornography and use of this material, we view this as a form of self-abuse. Mm-hmm. A lot of students don't want to acknowledge that or admit to it, but it really is, because, you know, not only are you consuming something that's really taking from others, but then you're taking from yourself and the behavior that you associate with consuming the material, and it's just degrading all the way around.
Because you're depriving yourself of what could be a more meaningful relationship with another human being.
Exactly. I mean, regardless of what your values are and your morality is, at just the bare minimum, you're robbing yourself of the capacity to experience sexual pleasure, mm-hmm. because you're dumbing down, you know, the way that your brain processes the sexual stimuli. And I know a lot of people who may never experience sexual satisfaction in a real relationship anymore, because quite frankly, they got hooked into a high that was more sexually arousing for them going to a sexually explicit chat room or a website or doing, you know, the video cams back and forth, watching others, you know, do whatever. And so that can be very arousing.
At a physical level.
Exactly, at a physical level. So when they get into a physical relationship and they become physical sexually with another person, they're literally doing the same things that we see sexual trauma victims and sexual abuse victims do. They're dissociating themselves from the experience. Mm-hmm. They're removing the emotional and the psychological and the spiritual effect of being sexual and just doing the physical side.
Because that's the
really
only
alarming.
Way they've ever known it.
Because that's the only way they've known it. And that's really the only thing you experience when you're sexual interacting with things like cyber porn. There is no emotional, there is no relational, there is no psychological. It's simply getting the physical buzz and the physical high. So then that becomes preeminent in a real relationship. That's where a lot of the women are getting caught, is the guys are coming in saying, well, I want to watch a porn video, or I want to do this that I've seen on porn. And what the women come back and tell me is, they say, you know, it's almost as if he needs this when we're together in order to be satisfied. And I said,
that's so demeaning.
You're exactly right. They'll say, you know, it's just like, I'm not enough. Right. And my response to them is, you're right, you aren't enough. For that person, that individual, you're not enough. So, and you probably never will be, as long as he's continuing or she's continuing to do this. So you need to think about that in terms of the way you view this relationship long term.
That's just heartbreaking. To see that level of destruction happening to both men and women. And he talks in other parts of his video, I recommend the entire video. He talks about women are getting sucked into this more. And as you mentioned, porn is being made for women. Why? Because they want to increase their consumer base. You know, if you can get women hooked on it, it's twice as many consumers. And I just want to read a little bit. This is my book, De-Cis, De-Trans, Detox, Getting Your Child Out of the Gender Cult. And I've got a section in here on pornography and some of the statistics around it. So if it's okay, I'll just read a paragraph or so from this. 50% of children ages 11 to 13 have viewed pornography. That number increases to 78% by age 17. Girls report having watched porn in order to meet boys' expectations of them. Pornhub's daily visits now exceed 100 million, and every minute, 63,992 new visitors come to the site. Pornography has not only become more pervasive in recent years, it's also become more brutal. Porn teaches that women enjoy violent sex. 38% of women under the age of 40 report having experienced unwanted slapping, gagging, choking, and spitting during sex. And it goes on. One of the first eye-opening moments that I had with some radfems in a group that I'm in, some radfem lesbians were talking about sex, and they said sex is really dangerous for heterosexual women. And I was like, I've never had dangerous sex. I'm grateful I've never been raped or abused. But as I started, you know, digging into that a little more and asking what they meant and realizing younger women in the generation beneath ours, this is their experience. They have sex with someone and they get choked, they get spat on, they get peed on, and they think this is normal. They think this is part of the sex process. And I think women in our generation don't appreciate what the younger women are experiencing and learning.
It's not surprising to me that so many girls are opting out of womanhood if they believe that's how you're treated as a woman, that that's normal sexuality, that that's our healthy sexuality. It's not at all surprising to me that they're saying, you know what, I'm a male. And that way they don't have to think about being degraded in these ways. And the pressure is so profound. I was thinking about when I was, when I turned 13, my parents were very sex positive. They thought sex was something that all people should enjoy, and there really weren't a lot of boundaries. And they gave me a copy of Playgirl for my 13th birthday.
Wow.
And the pictures are still in there, despite like me having seen all kinds of other things since then. Those pictures really, and the stories really, and it was so interesting because I was pretty naive, and I think there really wasn't a culture like there is now. And so I did what I thought I was supposed to do. I was really not very social. I didn't really get social interaction. I didn't really have many friends. And so I took one of the centerfold pictures to school and put it up in my locker, because that's what I thought we were supposed to do.
Right. That's what people do, right? Well, and we're finding this with today's sex ed in schools. A Barna Group report found 1 out of 3 students feels that today's sex ed in schools creates an expectation of having sex. Well, that if you're not, there's something wrong with you.
There's, you know, we've swung from, you know, a prudish culture to a culture that really shames anybody who isn't receptive to any sexual come-ons. It really reminds me of some of the dystopian novels that I've read, where, you know, the expectation was that if somebody wanted to have sex from you, it would be rude or really inappropriate to refuse it, because that's a gift you should give to them. And this is the narrative that these kids are saying.
Well, and I recently posted, this is going to sound very prudish, but just take it for the facts. I said the best way to prevent unwanted pregnancy, STDs, mm-hmm. AIDS, and possibly a broken heart is abstinence followed by marriage fidelity. Yeah. There are no value statements in that. It's just factual. If you don't have sex, you don't get pregnant. If you don't have sex, you don't get STDs. And somebody commented and said, I disagree. And he said, I think you hit on something, you know, valuable, but I disagree. And I kind of wanted to say, what do you disagree about? Do you think that people can get pregnant if they're not having sex? Do you think STDs are you know, shared if they're not having sex? And I think people just aren't thinking, because there is this assumption that everybody must have sex. You must have sex.
I think part of the culture too, because another message I got from my parents over and over again is that you can't control your behavior. Mm. You know, kids can't control themselves. They're going to have sex. They should just accept it. You know, that was what I grew up with. Nobody ever introduced the concept that I could say no. Nobody introduced the idea that I should wait, that you know, sex was something serious. I started having sexual intercourse when I was in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. It is not a good idea. I was not physically ready for it, and I definitely wasn't emotionally ready for it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason that we, you know, it's healthier to wait. You know, again, pregnancy, STDs, broken hearts, all kinds of things, and also being able to form healthy relationships as adults. All of this gets undermined by pornography, which, you know, as the gentleman said in the video, you get desensitized. It gets to the point where we're actually having, you know, teenage boys who are basically impotent because they've overstimulated that part of their brain and they no longer are responsive to normal sexual response.
And they're finding as well, you know, athletes will repeat the same motions over and over and over again. You know, people, men and women who play basketball, they will do layup after layup after layup after layup because they're training their muscles. They get that muscle memory so that when they're competing, they don't have to think about where should I stop below the basket? How far should I extend my arm? How high do I need to jump? That's all it's all in there already. They don't have to think about it. This is what pornography is doing. When you're masturbating to pornography, You are training your muscles, you're training your brain, you're training all your sexual system to react to images, not to a real person. And so they find that these men, and I'm sure women as well, most of the studies I've seen have been on men, but they cannot actually perform with a real person because they have trained their muscles and trained their body only to perform with images.
Right. And we've talked in the past about how many trans-identified kids are on the autism spectrum. Mm. And for kids who are autistic, that whole sexual dance that happens is going to be very uncomfortable for them. It's going to be harder than it is for regular people. I know autistic kids who, you know, they don't want to hug, they don't want to kiss, they don't want to hold hands, but then they start getting these sexual urges. And so it's really easy for them just to go to pornography. But that really reinforces the difficulties they have with those social interactions, rather than like pushing them to actually have healthy relationships. And those healthy relationships will benefit them so much more than the pornography. So there's so many layers to this. I think the big takeaway parents need to have is your kids very likely are watching pornography. You go to Pornhub and it says, are you over 18? And you click it to say yes. There's no verification. If a kid has access to the internet, they can access porn. And I was just watching a video, and this is a little tangential, but it was about a young man who started watching pornography when he was about 10 years old. And he was watching it and decided he was interested in sort of trying it out on someone, and his sister happened to be there. Mm. And he tried it out on his sister. So there are all kinds of levels to this. It can cause someone to develop that trans identity. It can cause them to hate themselves and their body, that dissociative process. Parents, you need to know that you've got to be really diligent. And I would even suggest talking to your parent or talking to your kids about it. It's not one of those things that we can pretend like it doesn't happen and it will go away.
And I think we as parents have been told, like you said before, oh, you're prudish if you don't like pornography. Pornography is innocent. It doesn't hurt anybody. Everybody's doing it. There's no way to keep your kids from doing it. And that's just all not true. We need to take it seriously. This is not just some innocuous video game that they're watching. This has profound effects on their bodies, on their minds, and on their future relationships. It will damage their future relationships. Even the one soft porn movie that I watched has had an effect on my sexuality as an adult. And we need to take that seriously. And this is probably a little tangential too, but I've talked with all my kids about dating, and I dated far too much when I was in high school. I wasted a lot of time on dating. I will even go so far to tell you, I nearly failed out of college because I was more interested in a boy than I was in my classes. And fortunately, I got fixed before that happened. But I've told my kids, I'm like, you know what? I really think the purpose of dating is to find the person you're going to marry and to find out, is this someone I want to marry? And if you're not in a position to marry yet, I'm not sure there's really any point to dating. Mm-hmm. There's points to having friends. There's points, you know, I'm not saying don't have friends with the opposite sex, but like to pursue an intimate relationship before you're in a position where you could get married. What I think happens is, and I've read this other places too, you get your heart broken. And then you love a little bit less the next time. You're just learning how to get over a broken heart and not care as much the next time. And so my wish for all my kids, and I've told them this, I said, I really hope you marry the first person you fall in love with.
Yeah.
And people are probably watching this thinking I'm incredibly naive and I'm stupid as heck. And the jury's out whether this is successful or yet or not.
Well, you know, I have a couple of friends who married their high school sweethearts. The first person they ever really dated seriously, and they're still together and they're still happy. And I can't say that about a lot of other couples. And I'm not saying that, you're not going to be happy if you've had other relationships, obviously, but I think it does taint them a little bit. I also wanted to talk about, you know, another aspect of pornography that is going to be difficult for parents of trans-identified kids to hear. But one of the things that we're seeing more and more is that kids who are seeking to get medicalized are pursuing pornography to pay for it. So they're actually going to different pornography sites, setting up accounts, and oftentimes minors can find workarounds to doing it. You know, the sites pretend like they're going to screen people, but there are workarounds. And so kids end up using this as a means to generate finances if they want to get these interventions and their parents aren't willing to pay for them. And one of the huge concerns on that is that it's a slippery slope into sex work and prostitution. And some of these kids even get pulled into prostitution on these pornographic sites. And so, you know, there's just so many layers to this that parents need to be aware of. It's so heartbreaking talking to a parent who calls and says, I think my child might be making porn. And, you know, there are some of us who are willing to go in and see whether or not that's the case. And we find that their child is indeed making porn in order to generate funds. That's you know, just another heartbreaking aspect of this. But it's really easy these days to make money off of making porn. And if you're a kid at home, you're probably too young to get a regular job, or maybe don't have time because you're in school all day. This is something that kids are resorting to. So again, just another way in which this is creeping into our culture. And you mentioned one earlier in the show, how pornography is creeping into our classrooms. And I think a lot of people might be like, oh, right, come on, you guys really are just prudes. One of the things that I've seen parents employing lately is taking curriculum and going into school board meetings and reading from the books that the kids are assigned, reading from the actually teacher lesson plans that the teachers are given. And the school board meetings are often like saying, halt, halt, you know, that's pornographic. You can't do that in here. And yet these are
this is a recorded meeting and there are minors present. You can't say those words.
And yet this is happening in the schools. There was one school board meeting but there was a meeting that I heard of here in Utah where, you know, the school board had no idea that they were talking about anal sex. They were talking about oral sex. They were talking about multiple sex partners, all of these things, which are really dangerous, especially for children. I mean, the fact that we would be, one of the things that Planned Parenthood is now telling kids is that if they have a sexually transmitted infection, they don't have to tell their partners because that's personal information. These are really upsetting. These are dangerous things that we're telling their kids. We know you're less likely to have an unplanned pregnancy. You're less likely to have a sexually transmitted infection or AIDS. If you delay your debut of sexuality, and if you are monogamous, but all the messages kids are getting now are telling them just the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at the comprehensive sex guide from SIECUS, SIECUS, I can never remember what that stands for, but CSE, Comprehensive Sex Education, this is what so many schools are putting into place. And it talks right in there about anal sex in a positive way. And I mean, there's no question that anal sex is dangerous. It damages the anus. It's a much faster vector for transmitting diseases because the anus is not as elastic as the vagina and it cracks easier. And it's a dirtier place just by function of what it is. And so that's completely irresponsible to introduce that to kids. And right here in Virginia, last year, the year before, it was 2019 or 2020, a teacher brought in a video about how to sexually pleasure your partner. And the parents got, you know, were furious and the school board said, oh, that shouldn't have happened. We're so sorry about that. I wish I could say that's a one-off and it was just some rogue sex ed teacher. This is the kind of stuff that they're pulling in they always say this is developmentally appropriate. They love that term, developmentally appropriate. If you hear someone tell you that something you are concerned about is developmentally appropriate, it's probably not. Right. This is another rewriting of the definitions of the words.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just read an article in one of the national media outlets about a high school where the kids went in and there was, porn being shown under the auspice of, comprehensive sexuality education. And so, again, this is another area where our society, I feel like, has gone off the deep end. I grew up with this kind of mentality. This was the mentality of my parents. They had very loose, if any, boundaries regarding sexuality. They encouraged sexuality. They talked about it as being, something much like going and getting an ice cream cone. If it feels good, do it. Being introduced to the Playgirl at 13. My brother got condoms in his stocking when he turned 13. In his Christmas stocking.
Wow.
And so these are the ideas. I believe that is sort of the mentality. They were sort of forerunners of this. And now it's sort of insinuated or something. When I was a child, that was, people were like, what? it's unheard of. So the fact that, it's gotten to the point now where this is the norm, it's hard to imagine if the boundaries continue to be broken down. Are they going to start actually having people have sex in front of the kids to teach them how to do it? I'm not sure that that's that far off.
Yeah, I know. That doesn't seem that really sensational to me anymore.
Not at all. I know.
And let's have a volunteer.
Let's have a volunteer come up. Let's talk about where you can stimulate. Let's practice. Yeah. It really doesn't seem that far-fetched based on what we're seeing in the schools. And again, the pornography industry and the promotion of sex work, which is prostitution, all of this is really, again, part of the transgender movement ideology, which is to break down those boundaries and groom kids. And I really feel like, much of this movement is all about pedophiles who have finally figured out a way to normalize their perversion and their damage to kids.
Yeah, I just saw something on social media yesterday, and it had, LGBTQPZ. Mm-hmm. And it was lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, pedosexual, zoosexual.
Oh, good. So we're getting bestiality in there too.
One child that I talked to learned what zoosexuality was in her GSA club in middle school.
Oh, wow.
And the parent asked, zoosexuality, what is that? And the child said, well, do you know what bestiality is? This is a 12, 13 year old child.
Yeah. One of the things that we hear from parents over and over again is they'll call us or they'll text us, they'll email us, and they'll say, my 10 year old used to identify as a lesbian, but now is trans. And I'm like, 10 years old, or my 9 year old, or my 12 year old identified as gay, and now they, really, developmentally, kids really don't know their sexual inclinations until they're older.
My daughter, when she was in either sixth or seventh grade, she told me about this friend of hers, and she said, I'll call her Louise. Oh, Louise is bisexual. And the mandatory reporter in me rose up. And I'm like, is Louise having sex with somebody? And my daughter said, oh, no, she's not. She just knows she's bisexual. And I said, bisexual means you are pursuing sexual relationships with both men and women. I said, she is not sexual if she's not having sex. And it's not appropriate for her to even be thinking about that at 11 or 12.
Yeah.
But kids are being asked earlier and earlier to identify.
I'm told that they should identify it. And again, if you're a girl who's watching porn and you're thinking, gosh, I don't want to have to be that submissive. I don't want to be slapped. I don't want to be told to lick spit off the floor. These are the images that they're seeing. And this isn't, It's not like Fringe anymore. It's not like you have to go underground to find it. All of this is right there. It's, choking, as you've said, hair pulling, slapping. I've even, seen videos where there's, fecal play, blood play, a lot of choking during oral sex, where, a woman is and gagging. That's like considered to be sort of one of the preeminent sexual things, if you can, have oral sex and gag and still enjoy it. So yeah, these kids are really, their whole sexuality is being hijacked, and it makes me really angry, because, I used to have this opinion that if, adults wanted to watch pornography, that's, that's their prerogative. I don't want to control other people's behavior, but it's gotten to the point that porn is so ubiquitous that it's impossible to avoid it. I mean, even on Blue's Clues, they had, a drag queen who was clearly sexual. This is for 3-year-olds doing, and there was this very sexual element to it. And we need to really fight back, Maria. I mean, this is bigger than just trans. But again, it doesn't surprise me that kids are identifying out of their sex, because...
No, because kids, it is not appropriate for prepubescent kids to encounter sexual topics. It is not normal. They do not have a driving interest in, and they should not have experience with sexual topics. It is not developmentally appropriate. Puberty is the time of sexual awakening. That is when they become adults. That is when they should start becoming aware of their sexuality, start becoming aware of the other sex as potential mates. That should be the beginning of a very gentle process. And they're being inundated, bombarded, indoctrinated with it from the youngest ages. And it's pathologizing kids. The sexualization is pathologizing kids. And one of the things that I've asked when I've been in discussions on social media with people who tell me I'm a prude and all this, I'll say, well, is there a line? Is there a line that kids should not be introduced to this stuff? And very often I'll be told, no, they need to learn this stuff. This is education. They need to know this because they'll need to know it later. So I say, okay, snuff porn, where somebody's killed in front of you. Is that appropriate for a child to see? Generally, the person I'm discussing will not respond. Mm-hmm. They'll just leave the conversation because they know. They do know that there's a line. Mm-hmm. And your line might be different from my line, but my line exists and should be honored, should be respected. Parents' wishes for their kids need to be respected. And there is a line. And the party line on this sex positive side is there's no line. Kids need to be introduced to everything. Well, take that out to its logical conclusion. That means a 3-year-old can be raped by a bunch of men for those other men's pleasure. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. And we know that's wrong. We know that's wrong.
Yeah. And that's where, I mean, we really need to set some boundaries. And the other thing is kids need to, one of the reasons that puberty is powerful is it's an opportunity for kids to learn how to control their bodies. When they're told, you know what, you can't control these urges, there's nothing you can do about it, you might as well just give into it, mm-hmm. that really undermines their ability to learn about important other things. I mean, it's to me, like, one of the most fundamental things is if you can learn, you have control over your impulses. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to be overeating, you're going to do drugs when they come along, you're going to overspend, you're never going to learn how to control those impulses.
When I was in college, I mentioned I almost failed out because I had a boyfriend, and when he would pull up on his motorcycle as I was walking to class, I could go sit in class or I could go for a motorcycle ride with this nice looking guy. And I would pick the motorcycle ride. Mm-hmm. And I was making very immature, short-sighted decisions. And I needed someone, and fortunately I had someone kind of come alongside me and be like, Maria, you need to make decisions. You're making decisions that are going to affect the rest of your life.
Right.
And fortunately I was able to mature and get back on track. And I didn't have the exposure to stuff that kids are getting now, that message that you can't control yourself. Oh, you shouldn't do anything that makes you unhappy. Because in that moment, going and sitting in math class was not the thing that was going to make me happy in that moment. But that's what adults do. We make good decisions based on long-term consequences. And kids are being taught now, you can't be uncomfortable. You can't restrain yourself. You can't make decisions that make you uncomfortable right now. We're doing a terrible disservice to kids.
We really are. It's really heartbreaking. And one of the things that I wanted to mention again is that Planned Parenthood is willing to give out PrEP, which is basically what they give to people who are promiscuous so that they won't get AIDS. I actually called a Planned Parenthood clinic and impersonated a 14-year-old girl. And I said I was a prostitute and I wondered if I could get PrEP without my parents' knowledge. And they said yes. So, you know, your kids might be watching porn, they might be having sex, they might be taking something like PrEP, which we don't even, I mean, these are serious hardcore drugs, Maria. These could undermine our society, really, as viruses adapt to the drugs and become resistant, you know, especially when you have 14-year-old kids taking them. This is really, you know, on so many levels, it's dangerous.
And I believe you only have to weigh 77 pounds.
Right.
So if you weigh 77 pounds, like an 11-year-old?
It's little. So, again, these are a lot of topics, and they're all kind of intertwined. Do you have any questions from parents this week?
Yes, we have one. I found some really troubling stuff in my daughter's browser history. There were videos of kids and adults wearing diapers and sucking on binkies, and some involved sex acts. How do I talk to my daughter about this? I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah, and one of the things is you do need to talk to your daughter. If you just pretend like this isn't happening, it's going to escalate. And it is really hard to talk to your kids about this stuff. But I would approach it the same as you would drugs or any other behavior you're concerned about. If you make it all kind of like uncomfortable and weird, then the kids are going to pick up on that. And so I would even suggest maybe, you know, role playing some conversations with either a friend or a partner or, you know, somebody who's aware of this. There's also risk. Oh gosh, I'm not sure if I'm going to remember the exact training. It's risk avoidance training that is available online. And I'll try and find a link to that. But that's sort of, there's some people who are coming in and saying, why are we teaching risky behaviors to kids? We need to be teaching them risk avoidant behaviors. And there are some resources out there for parents that can cover in a lot more detail than we can.
Yeah. Well, and with approaching this with your child, there's some ways you can do it when you have to have these difficult conversations, these uncomfortable conversations, especially if you're concerned because maybe your child would be upset that you looked through her browser history. Now in my house, my kids know until they're 18, we have all their passwords. We have access to everything. Everything that goes to their email inboxes gets copied to ours. That's just been a decision that we've made and the kids know that. If you have not made that decision and you've sneaked this, you will need to come clean with that. And one good way and time to have difficult conversations is in the car when you're driving and your child is next to you and you don't have to look at each other. Mm-hmm. You can both be looking forward and you don't have to look right at each other. That can be a really good time to have a conversation that might be difficult. Mm-hmm. You also have a captive audience. They can't really leave while you're driving. But a way to start it might just be to say, hey, I need to admit something that I did. And I need to talk to you about something that concerns me. Mm-hmm. I went into your browser history because I was concerned that some things were happening that I needed to know about. And I saw some things there that really concerned me. Would you like to talk to me about what's in your browser history? Now, with what I just said, I didn't say what I saw in the browser history. I admitted that I did something, and I'm not going to say it's wrong, but you know, I admitted that I did something the child wouldn't like, but then open it up with that open-ended question, because frankly, there may be more there that you didn't even see.
Yeah.
And if you put it in the child's, put that ball in the child's court, you might get more than you even knew you were looking for. Mm-hmm.
And also be aware of, you know, your kids might be going over to friends' houses. So even if it's not on their browser history, it's, you know, it's possible that they're seeing it. I can't remember who it was that was telling me about some kids on a bus who had a cell phone and they were showing pornography.
Well, that was me. That was me. A friend of mine, her son was in pre-K.
Yeah. And so that's, I think that's the hardest part, is that older kids sometimes are getting, you know, they think it's funny to show this to younger kids and really young kids. And it, you know, I don't think they're to blame because they've been exposed to it and they don't really have the means to process it. But again, it's everywhere. And I think, you know, this is one of those issues that I would encourage people to write to their legislators about. There are things that we can do to make it less accessible. And I think we owe it to our children to do that. And, you know, there are people who will argue that it's free speech, but, you know, your free speech stops being protected when it starts harming me, my children, my family, my society.
Well, you can't stand up in a crowded theater and scream fire.
Right. Yeah.
That isn't covered by free speech.
Where, you know, this is, and there, you know, I believe it might even be in Utah where they passed some legislation to have more, to require more significant verification of adulthood before being able to access pornographic sites. This can be done. You know, there's no reason it can't be done. The reason it's not is the same motivator as the trans industry, that they're making so much money that they don't want to stop. They're just raking it in.
They are. And frankly, I have gotten to the place where I think children should not have social media. Yeah. I think children should not have smartphones. My oldest has a smartphone. He's done pretty well with it. I'm grateful for that. My other two don't have phones. My daughter, who just finished sophomore year, doesn't even want one. She's concerned about what she's seeing social media wise and everything. She doesn't even want one. But if I were to get kids phones today, I would get them flip phones. Only flip phones that has texting and phone. That's it.
Yeah, I would agree. Because again, this is a part of, you know, kids having the ability when there's so much pressure on them. And there's also just, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I see kids sitting together and they're all on their phone. And that's because that's what their parents are doing. They're learning. They might even be texting the kid next to them. Mm-hmm. Social media, I think, is having the same kind of impact as the Industrial Revolution. You know, it's having as electricity, as some of these major, major innovations. And we haven't quite figured out how to make it a positive thing. And I think we'll get there, but it is going to take parents calling their legislators, sending emails, you know, contacting their schools, really going into the school board meetings, seeing what your kids are saying. I mean, I'm actually shocked. I saw some excerpts from a book that was being taught, I believe it was in an eighth or ninth grade classroom. And I was like, whoa, I mean, this is not like, you know, I held her hand, they kissed.
Oh no, my friend's son was assigned this book that, I mean, it's gay porn.
Explicitly about, you know, reaching down, feeling our penis, stroking it. I mean, very explicit stuff that probably was very similar to what was in the Playgirl I had when I was a kid. And so, you know, it's now in the high schools. And maybe we need to at some point do a video where we just read and talk about, you know, this so that people believe us. But you know what would happen? It would be taken down from YouTube for violating their community standards.
Well, school boards, you know, they won't let you read aloud from it at the school board meeting.
Right, exactly.
But your eighth grade English teacher is assigning it.
So. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of work to do. I'd encourage you to come to Partners for Ethical Care. We got a lot of resources there, and I'll post stuff on the description of the video so that you
can. Oh, and let's do a shout out. Our friend Alex, who's the gender mapper, does a great 4-part course on all of this stuff, and she does one segment on pornography. So we'll put that in the description.
She goes into a lot more depth than we're doing here, and she also is able to give parents more very specific ideas on how to monitor their kids and block their kids' ability to access porn, what kind of search results you're looking for, what kind of terms that you might, you know, one of the things you can do in a browser is, you know, just type in an A and see what populates it. See what other search terms other people have been using, type a B and C, you know, I mean, I don't know if you want to go through the whole alphabet, but that you can learn a lot about, you know, what people have been searching just by doing that. But again, her course is excellent and really can help parents. So there are starting to be resources. I think, again, like the trans movement, this kind of got ahead of us and you know, just ran us over like a freight train. And now we're trying to catch up to stop it. But I do think we can do, we have, you know, I think if enough parents start complaining, things will change.
I think so too.
So what's next
week? We are going to talk about boys and gender dysphoria. We've spent a lot of time talking about girls because the largest population of transgender identified kids is young girls. But there are a lot of boys too, and they're a different population with different needs. And so we're going to discuss that a little next week.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Erin. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.